So the U.S. trustee program began in earnest in all 48 states, other than two, in November 18th of 1988. I was appointed October 1st, 1988. So when I began, we had what were called estate administrators. They were people that worked in the clerk's office, either a lawyer or an accountant, and they would review fee applications, final reports and account, and they were responsible for sort of monitoring the trustees to make sure that they weren't stealing from the estates and that they were doing all their work. So the U.S. trustee system was designed to take over that function as well as many others. Now, apparently there were some, I would say, influential politicians in North Carolina and Alabama that did not want the U.S. trustee system. And I looked it up to see who that might be, and I don't know exactly who it was because I wasn't paying that much attention in the 70s, but Senator Irvin and Senator Helms in North Carolina and Hal Heflin and John Sparkman in Alabama, one or more of those might have had something to do with that. So they kept Alabama three districts and North Carolina three districts out of the U.S. trustee system. And so that's kind of the source of our problem today.
Well, and one of the other distinctions was that while there was the pilot program going on for the U.S. trustee system, in those two states and in their six districts, they had in place a mechanism whereby administrators were appointed by the circuit. So how the process worked was different in those two states.
And so they had bankruptcy administrators instead of the U.S. trustee system. But Congress didn't impose U.S. trustee fees in North Carolina or Alabama. So if you were in Texas, you had U.S. trustee fees only until confirmation at that time. If you were in North Carolina or Alabama, you had no U.S. trustee fees, and you had bankruptcy administrators that were created under the statute to supervise cases in those two states. And so that might be a significant monetary advantage for those two states. So we go along a few years, and in California, there was a dispute over U.S. trustee fees in a case called St. Angelo. St. Angelo was actually the U.S. trustee in California versus Victoria Farms, and it was only $400 in dispute, but the Ninth Circuit said that it violated the uniformity clause, that they were charging unequal amounts in California versus either North Carolina or Alabama, and so they invalidated the statute that created the bankruptcy administrator system. So in response, Congress passed an amendment to, and this is contained in 28 U.S.C. Section 1930, that allowed the Judicial Conference of the United States to impose U.S. trustee fees in the bankruptcy administrator districts in North Carolina and Alabama. But what happens if they don't? Well, they did, and so it went along for many years. But then 2 years ago, Congress passed a statute creating some bankruptcy judgeships and making permanent some other temporary judgeships, and they imposed increased U.S. trustee fees in that statute. And it was little known about. It was kind of a stealth bill, passed 2 years ago, became effective January 1st, 2018. But the cap on U.S. trustee fees went from $30,000 a quarter to $250,000 a quarter. So basically it went from $120,000 a year to $1 million a year if you had enough disbursements to be taxable, so to speak. And so this came as quite a shock when a lot of Chapter 11 debtors' estates got a bill in the spring of 2018 because it had gone up so much. And the case that I had, which is called Buffets and kind of led some of this off, they had a confirmed plan they had filed in 2016. They'd confirmed a plan in April of 2017, and here we are in 2018, and all the assets have been given to the creditors that they're going to get in a creditor's trust. They're not going to get any more, and the debtor's operating, but they can't close the case because there's objections to claims and adversaries. And so their U.S. trustee fees go from $30,000 the quarter before to $120,000, and it's coming out of the equity holders' pockets. It's not coming out of the creditors' pockets at that point. And they're just in shock. So Let's go to crayon growers now. Kate had a case in Wisconsin called crayon growers or cranberry growers, where they had a similar surprise event when they got their bill, and there was a little different twist on the facts there.
Yeah, the debtor in CranGrow filed its Chapter 11, but it had a peculiar fact situation in that its primary secured lender was not your typical bank. It was a different kind of a lender. And so in negotiating leading up to the filing for some sort of post-petition financing or the anticipated need for the use of cash collateral, the pre-petition lender wanted some assurance that they were going to have protection. They wanted some assurance and had been advised about some of the benefits of treatment of post-petition financing as an administrative expense. And so to look to how they were going to protect themselves, because they weren't a bank, because the debtor's accounts receivable, in which the lender had a security interest, weren't going to be deposited in an account with the secured creditor, they struck upon the idea that they would do a roll-up. And in effect, the agreement was that all of the debtor's accounts receivable would come into the secured creditor.